What is your name?
Khushbu.
So, how did you? You came across
Yes, so.
Some videos, or
yeah,
can you
so
tell me a bit?
Sure. So, one thing led to another.
I think it's being recorded.
Yes, so one thing led to another. So, it started with. So, I've always been a devotee of Shirdi Sai Baba. So, ever since I was a child.
How old are you now, if I may ask?
20. So ever since I was a child, but it was not very conscious, like just because my parents went and, you know, I just accompanied them. And then about last year, I got this pull. So I got certain visions, and the Sai Satcharita book actually manifested, like it was brought in 2012, but I never came across it. And one fine day I just happened to see it, and you know, I happened to read it, and I was just taken aback. And then I searched up videos for Sai Baba. I came across Mohanji, which led me to Sai Baba Devotee Speaks. And then I came across your videos. And then I came across Rameshji. And then I came across your books. So one thing led to another.
So what kind of visions, if you'd like to share, moved you or kind of, you know, showed you the direction?
Right. So I've been a seeker for as long as I can remember, again unconsciously.
Sure.
So it's been like, as Rameshji says, a flip-flop phase. So I have been seeking, but I have also been, you know, pulled by the by what is happening around, like in the sense, very unconsciously pulled, as in giving into the norms, giving into everything around and forgetting what I'm seeking.
Yes.
So a flip flop, so to speak.
Yeah.
So yeah. So as you mentioned about the visions, so there were certain things happening in life, and I just experienced a certain bliss. Like there were many synchronicities, many, you know, things, like I'm just thinking of something and that's actually happening. So, and in a way that only I can understand, like, you know, like it may sound very normal, very generic, but in a way that it's happening to make me realize something. And the padukas of Shirdi Sai Baba actually manifested in the house as well. So I remember burning a wax candle, and the wax melted in the shape of a paduka. So I don't think there could be something greater than that. Yes, and then I was mysteriously, again, I was called to Shirdi. So I don't know how that happened. So the lockdown was happening, and, you know, and I wasn't getting the pass. We had to book it, right? So I wasn't getting it, and I don't know, the passes were full, but there was one left, or I don't know what happened, but I just happened to be called there. That was about last year, again. So this entire thing, you know, was really, I don't know. And yeah, then I came across the videos, and it resonated very deeply. It's as if I've known it all my life, but all my life has so far up till the age of 20, but yeah, it just, I don't know, it just moved me very deeply, and I can't like, there's no going back. Like it's just a black hole, it's a rabbit hole. I mean, it's just going deeper and deeper, because I've tried to go back. Go back as in be like my friends, be like, you know, like my circle. So, but it's just not happening. Like, you know, the way I'm thinking, the way I'm looking at things is from a completely different prism, which is, yeah, so.
So what would you feel, if you had to put it in words, which might be difficult, that between your conscious discovery, which as you said rightly so was unconscious largely, and now it's come into the realm, so to speak, consciously, how has it changed your life or your perspective on life and daily living?
So I find myself more peaceful in circumstances I should actually be fretting over. And one thing I've realized is that ever since the teaching has come my way, I have been bombarded with all the more trials and tribulations, which actually is, I'm taking it as a test to see how deeply the teaching has sunk. So, yeah. So there, see, honestly, I am still reacting. It's not that my conditioning is changed. I am still reacting. I'm still responding how I used to previously. But deep down, I experience this peace that it is happening because it is precisely the way it is.
Yes. Well said.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to work on the conditioning. That is the important part.
And that is the problem. The ego wants to work on the conditioning. If you didn't create the conditioning in the first place and God did, leave it to God. You see what happens. And in your case, you have been given a gift. Okay. You have been given the gift of grace from a master like Shirdi Sai Baba. You saw synchronicities in life, you saw events happening, you were drawn to Shirdi, and so on and so forth. None of that was your doing. None of that was your doing. The fact that at the age of 20, you are already asking about the meaning of life, what it is about. One is your social aspect with your friends, which you realize there's something deeper, as you say, a black hole. None of this was your doing. This has happened through life's circumstances, through your innate nature, through your conditioning. And therefore, that force which brought this about must be trusted to take you home. This is a very important point. Because the ego is used to doing work, working on myself. It's a form of doership. What happens? One is not saying to sit back and don't do anything. That is also the polaric opposite of doership. The ego feels I can do things, or maybe I should sit back and not do anything. That is also doership. Because if it's one's nature to do something, that is the nature. Let's say my nature is that I like going for a long walk. And then I say, no, now this teaching of non-doership means I'm going to sit and not do a long walk. What's the point? I'm going against nature. Some people may not want to go for a long walk. You see? So, this teaching points to something very simple. The source, consciousness, God, call it what you will, has given Khushbu a glimpse of things deeper than the mundane world, which interests her. And she finds that journey perhaps fascinating in one sense, fearful in another sense, the black hole, the rabbit hole. All this has come from the source. Now, the source needs to be allowed to do its job as far as Khushbu is concerned. But the ego steps in and says, no, now I will change my conditioning. I will change the way I react. I will change the way I respond. That is what, in fact, takes one further away from the peace. But when we accept, now let's take very mundane examples, and I love that because my own teacher would take daily living mundane examples. Someone pushes your button and you react. Now what happens? Earlier it was unconscious. It was just a knee-jerk reaction, you see. Now the understanding comes, I reacted based on my genetics and condition, which God created. Perhaps I feel I should not have reacted. I should have not answered back. I should have not shouted, whatever it may be. Fair enough. But the first step is that my reaction is based on factors which were not in my control. Now, what the other person said or did to which I reacted is also based on factors which were not in their control. This is the understanding. You may call it even an intellectual understanding, but that much is understood. That now I do see how people are the way they are, how I am the way I am. That is seen. Now that understanding must be allowed some space to do its job. How does it do its job? It doesn't mean an instant change in your reaction. It can take time because there's years and years of conditioning. But supposing this person upset you, with this understanding, earlier maybe you were sulking, you would say, I won't speak to this person anymore. You will the next moment again speak to the person. You may apologize for your reaction, depending if you feel the person was hurt, and you may say, I didn't mean to. You see, so what happens is, one is no longer involved in the reaction. One is open to the next moment. This person who upset you might say something the next day which you find really meaningful. So you're open to that. This creates an openness. This obsession with I should change my reaction, I should change the way I respond, that vacates the place. And one accepts things as they are, people as they are, myself as I am, and I'm very open to what the next moment brings between the two of us. In that way, the teaching is operating in the background. So if you have felt that some level of peace is there, no matter my reactions, no matter my responses, there is that deep peace, as you said, that is actually it. And you are quite right that trials and tribulations come one's way. And that is why these are the test of the teaching in daily living. And if you find that despite the challenges of the day, of what life brings, I do feel that there is that peace beneath it all. That is a tremendous gift which can get overlooked. And I have often said this, as the Aghori Vimlananda said, that life is full of surprises. To know how deep the impact is on someone, like he talked about school children. In our days, we had the exams which were at predetermined points of time in the year, and surprise tests. Suddenly the teacher would come in and say, today surprise test. To know whether the students were actually studying every day or were they just mugging up towards the prelims and the final exams. And he said, because it is the surprises of life which come to us, and then we know deep down how we have faced these challenges. Then that shows us a level, you could say, of peace. The acceptance of what is, not the compulsion that this should have been another way, but dealing with what comes to the best of our ability. If it is pain, not saying, oh, I accept the pain fully, let me suffer. Accepting it, seeing what can be done, doing it to the best of one's ability, and leaving the results to God. Free of this burden that, why did this happen? This should not have happened. Did I do my best? Why didn't I do my best? Why isn't the outcome different? All that is the baggage.
There's still this feeling that I could have done something.
You know? Sure, you could have, but you didn't. So even the feeling can arise, I could have. Perhaps in hindsight, I feel I could have approached this differently. Certainly, we analyze, we see things, what could have been. But the fact that it didn't happen that way, then that whole thing is dropped. It ends there. The involvement is cut off there. So what happens? That becomes our experience. Now we've understood that in a particular situation, perhaps this approach might have been better. Let's say another situation presents itself. Again, we see whether that experience comes to fruit and it changes the way we react or respond, or it doesn't. Who knows? But that's all we can do. Take life day by day, moment by moment, and see what happens. And Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi said, let what comes come, let what goes go, and see what remains. That what remains is that sense of peace you were talking about. The rest is mind stuff. The mind is going to react, respond, judge its reaction, judge its response, and all that will go on. That is the nature of the mind. Just like supposing one sits in meditation and there are many thoughts going on, it doesn't mean that you didn't have a deep meditation. Thoughts are seen as thoughts and they are coming and going. But the one who is aware that there are many thoughts, who is that? There is something which is not the thoughts, which is aware that there are many thoughts. So where do you feel you are on your journey now?
I often get this feeling that I just don't exist. Like everything is just happening, and there are times when I'm in the middle of something and I just realize, like, where have I come from? What am I doing here? Like, was I just dropped here? And like, is this really what I'm supposed to do? Like, okay, as per the societal conditioning, you need to your school, then your college, then so on and so forth. So is this really what is going to happen? I mean, I don't know. I just get this feeling that I don't exist at all, and it's just happening. I'm just dreaming something, and it's just happening. And then, as I mentioned, and then once I'm back in reality, I just forget about it. But there are these glimpses where I just feel that, like, from where has all this come? From where have I come? Like, do I really exist at all? And then I happen to read certain books like I Am That and Pointers from Ramesh Palsekar and all of those books, and I'm just flabbergasted. I don't know what to say. I'm just short of words, you know. I'm just fumbling a lot because I really can't put it into mere words.
Does it disturb the way you conduct yourself and the way you are working and operating in daily living, or you are able to manage that and this is going on in the background?
So, as I mentioned, this was there unconsciously, but ever since the last year, it's heightened a lot. So, I find myself being too complacent and, you know, just as in I don't, it's, I want to put in the work, but I just find everything too futile to do. So if you talk about, like, as of now, I'm in my career making years, I'm in my 20s, so I have a lot to look forward to. So I am doing everything I can, but it all seems so futile. I can't make up my mind. I can't select a particular field because everything just seems, you know, like just preconceived notions, you know, that you have to do this, you have to go here, you have to do this, you know, and I just can't make up my mind as to what is to be done. So in the bargain, I'm getting too complacent with, you know, probably not doing things sometimes.
You see, this needs to be looked at. This needs to be looked at. What you're mentioning is something which happens a lot of the times. But what needs to be looked at is, what do you truly feel like doing? Like you said, a lot has been decided by society, the way we operate, the way we work in. Now, let us look at it in a couple of different ways. Because we have to operate in society. We have to operate in daily living. Right? We have to understand that what comes naturally to us is to be honored. Now, what do I mean by that? This may sound odd, but my teacher would mention this very often. That when I feel I have to go to the bathroom, I go to the bathroom. Like he would say, you think you can sit in bed and say, I'm not going to go to the bathroom. You will be forced to go to the bathroom by what? By nature. Right? Now, deep down, we know what we are naturally inclined for. Supposing, let's take it that if we are, let's say, naturally inclined towards art, for example, an artist who has this innate feeling that I'm the happiest when I'm an artist, then the mind will say, is it the right profession? Is it, will I make money? Will it not? The mind is judging the profession. But deep down, the artist knows I love creating art. Right? The rest is social conditioning, what is right, what is wrong, parents saying that don't pursue art, you will not make money. That is a different story. But the nature is there. So, if one steps back and rediscovers what is that nature, what do I truly enjoy doing? What do I feel naturally inclined to do? You know that since you are young, this can bring a lot of clarity into the equation. Because would you say that I'm naturally inclined to not doing anything and being complacent? No. The point is, maybe there's a flip-flop. Maybe the mind is confused. By all means, there's always confusion. Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I take up this? Should I take up that? But you will know what your nature is. Now, some people are naturally complacent. They've been so from childhood, let's say. They are not doers. Some people are doers. So that answer you already have with you. You see? Now, is everything futile or not? That is the million-dollar question. The answer is, futile for whom? If you are not the doer of your actions, and you are an instrument through whom God's will functions, the question of futility will not arise. But for the ego which thinks it is the doer, all my effort I'm doing, is there any purpose? I'm going to die at the end of it all, supposing. What is the purpose of all this? What is the purpose of getting up in the morning, going to my job, going to college, when none of this really makes sense? It's not permanent. Doesn't last forever, looks like a movie in a can, a passing show. It is all futile. Therefore, perhaps I should not do any of this. It's the doership. The whole thing points to the doership. If one is living one's life in the natural flow of life, this question of futility will not arise in that sense, because everything is a movie. As Vivekananda would say, this is the living dream. And he would say, if I don't remember his quotation correctly, that the only aim or goal is to be a conscious dreamer. You see? But it doesn't mean not doing anything. It doesn't mean not doing anything.
So by complacent, I meant not knowing the right way to pursue what I innately feel.
Yes.
What? Because I can't say I'm complacent, because I am on my toes. Like, I am doing one thing after another, but I just feel that what I am doing is not worth it. There is something deeper which is to be pursued, and I cannot find the means to do that. And that is what is creating this ruckus in the head.
But that is the spiritual journey. These are two separate things. One is what I am doing in daily living. Career, job, education, and that something deeper, the peace which you mentioned, the deep peace, that is your inward journey. Have I understood that correctly, or
Absolutely.
Would you like to elaborate on that?
No, it was about this. I think I'm mixing the two up. I think it is about living the teaching while daily living, like living the peace while you are engaged in your activities.
Of course it is that. In that sense, it is the same. I'm sorry to confuse you.
Yes.
In that sense, it is the same. Now, let's take an example of Sai Baba. He tells somebody, I've forgotten the names, who's one of his devotees, that I will come tomorrow at 4 p.m. to your house. And so this lady makes a feast and is ready and waiting, and he does not show up. But around the same time, there's a dog outside her door that starts barking for food, and she keeps shooing the dog away and is oblivious to everything. She's waiting for Sai Baba and he hasn't shown up after giving his word. So she's very upset. And then she goes to him and says the next day, "What is this? I made this feast for you, waited for you. You didn't show up." He said, "I did. At 4 p.m. I was outside your door. But you didn't give me food." Now you see, this is where living the teaching comes in. If you felt that all there is consciousness, everyone, including the hungry dog, is part of the one whole consciousness, and if in that moment this one hungry dog came before you barking for food, what is living the teaching? To give the dog the food. So in that sense they are not separate. This is called living the teaching. But we segregate, compartmentalize, have a hierarchy. Sai Baba is up there, the dog is down there. I prepared food for Sai Baba. And what is he showing to this lady? That it's all one. So in that sense, the two cannot be separated, because if I had the understanding that everyone is an instrument of Sai Baba, I would be equal to all. That is what my teacher spoke about all the time, living the teaching. So you cannot have relationships which are not harmonious most of the time and be at peace. Because then the teaching is not being lived. Imagine that during the day, there's the rough and tumble of daily living. You're buffeted by what happens. You're upset by some people. Then peace of mind cannot be had. It is to happen through relationships, through what happens in life. It, in that sense, cannot be separate from what happens in life. If one is at peace, one's relationships will by and large be peaceful. Because we accept the relationship for what it is, people for who they are, and what they say. We may not like it. We accept that also. But we accept that they are an instrument of God. So we are no longer pointing fingers at people, which we were perhaps doing earlier. That is not happening. Therefore, it means we are living the teaching. Now, something happens at work which upsets me. I have to accept first that something happened which upset me. The minute I say this should not have happened, there's a conflict. My peace has gone. So first I accept this has upset me. I look at it. This person said something which I didn't like or did something. Fair enough. I have to decide whether to say something back or not. My decision. But when I accept that this person at work did or said something that was meant to happen, otherwise they would not have said or done something. That first acceptance itself brings the peace. Then I accept my fight is not with an individual because they are not the doers of their actions, as the Buddha also said. They are basing their actions on their conditioning and genetics. So my fight is no longer with the individual. So it's no longer as personal as it was. Then I say what I have to say. Look here, I feel this is what you could have addressed this issue as or whatever. And the equation is viewed more objectively. Again, what is happening is the teaching is functioning in daily living. So if you find that your daily living is still turbulent, then it means that the teaching which has been accepted at the intellectual level still has to permeate deeper and deeper and deeper, which it will, but it has to be allowed that space. How is that space allowed? As I said, the ego should not step back and say, now I will see how to change my conditioning, what to do. The teaching came along, opened your eyes to a new way of seeing, a new way of being. It appealed to you. You were drawn to it. Let it do its job. Meanwhile, do what you have to do in terms of work, career, whatever it is. Don't try to fast forward your journey to peace.
Yes. I was waiting for that.
Because to fast forward your journey to peace will take you further away. It is a very nice emotion because it shows the yearning for the peace. It is not to be discounted because now I have felt it. I had glimpses of peace. I'd love more of it. It's a beautiful yearning or a calling back home. We cannot discount that. But we have to understand that God will show us the way home. And we have to understand that the ego tends to do this. It tends to even control things it didn't start in the first place. And that is the nature of the ego. We don't have to say, why is the ego like this? It is the nature of the ego. Even that has to be seen. How is everything seen? In the light of understanding. And that light of understanding is the light of love, you could say. Everything has to be seen lovingly. Even what upsets me, the way I feel I should change, what I should do, it has to be seen with love, that this is the way God has just made this whole manifestation. Others, myself, my reactions, my thoughts. So one has to be gentle with oneself, gentle with what arises in the moment, gentle with others. So in that gentleness, this space is created for things to happen the way the divine force wants them to happen. And your gift is you are only 20 years old. So when you are on this path of self-discovery, it can take you very far in your career, in daily living. It is a gift. It is not a burden. It is not a burden. Don't view life as a burden. Be grateful that in your case, God has opened your eyes to the transient nature of things. You are not caught up in this whirlwind, like you said, your friends are caught up of what we usually do in our 20s. It is a gift.
And I did not see it coming. Like, I could not have imagined this, say, 2 years back. So I did not do anything.
There you go. Now I'll tell you, since your name is Khushbu, which means fragrance, beautiful fragrance rather. What is that fragrance? Does a flower know that it gives out a fragrance? It doesn't know. Yet it draws people to it. Oh, what a beautiful fragrance. It draws bees to it. Is it doing anything? It is being itself, the way God created it. The fragrance is happening. And Ramakrishna said, when the flower blooms, the bees come uninvited. When the flower blooms, the bees come uninvited. What does that mean? You will be perhaps surprised, perhaps not, that when one blooms with the understanding, one emanates peace. Why? Because one is at peace. You cannot emanate peace without being at peace. And then one finds that people are drawn to that peace. That is why very often on the path, people lose their friendships. Old friendships drop away. Why? Because they were based on a certain construct, based on conditioning. But when we no longer derive our sense of self from those relationships, which is normally a give and take, you know, that's always how relationships work. When we no longer derive our sense of self from these relationships, we are no longer playing this game, so to speak. And then we are more comfortable with ourselves the way God has created us, which means we are more comfortable in our being. And what perhaps might happen, some friendships might fall off, new ones may emerge. Maybe someone who is drawn to now this way of being which I have discovered, which I am comfortable with, someone else might come into your fold who resonates with that.
So you shouldn't try to impose it on anybody, like, because once you experience certain things, you want other people to, you know, come along with you on the path.
Yes, that is a very important point you raised, and a beautiful one. The answer is to impose beyond a point is a form of violence. Why? Because it's too much doership. The intent is noble. I experienced something which got me peace or a new way of looking at life. I want to share it with people. Now, in my case, I was dragged to my teacher. I had no intention of going. So my sister's intent was noble, right? But beyond a point, you know, to drag and drag and ghasitofy someone, that means you're trying to control the outcome. This is very important. You see, this does not mean that let's take this teaching. And I remember at my teacher's satsangs where people brought their friends because they genuinely felt, I want to share this with my dear friends, you know. And some friends would keep coming, others came once and didn't come. So that so-called noble intent to share is a divine intent. By all means, you must, if you're drawn to anything, it could be music. Supposing you enjoy a song and you want to tell your friend, hey, listen to this song, it's really beautiful. You're not going to hold back. You enjoyed it, you're going to tell your friend. But supposing you call your friend up every month, did you hear the song? Did you hear the song? You didn't hear the song. What kind of a person are you? I'm going to come to your house and make you hear the song. You see? Yeah. It's the same thing. So, when I read a book which impacts me, I love to tell people about it. I share what I have learned from it. I sometimes say, please read this book if you have the time and inclination. But I will not go beyond that. And what tends to happen, if you keep trying to push someone towards something, there's a pushback. The ego does not like it, you see. The ego does not like being told what to do. Being told what to do once is enough. Beyond that, the ego is going to push back. So, by all means, we must share what makes us happy, gives us joy, knowing that everyone is on their journey, on their path. God will bring them on the path whenever they are destined to. My job is, it's in my nature to share something which has impacted me, I share it. The rest is not in my control.
Also about certain parts of your personality, which you, again, you said not to try and work on it because that is hurting you. But there are times when, you know, you keep doing the same things over and over again, and in retrospect, you're like, why did I do it? You know, I have done this time and again, and now I want to stop, but you just cannot help being the way you are.
Yes, which shows that I'm not the doer.
All these things about working on yourself.
No, we must work on ourselves. See, make no mistake. We must work on ourselves if we feel it's the right thing, knowing that we didn't create these aspects of our personality. Again, this is not a teaching which says don't do anything. Do that which you precisely think and feel you should do in a particular situation. If that situation means working on myself, by all means. But now what happens? Now I know all I can do is try. So when I know all I can do is try and the results are not in my control, as you said, it still doesn't change things, there's a sense of relief, not frustration. Now, why? Because I know all I can do is try, the results are not in my hands. So there's no room anymore for frustration. Frustration may arise in the moment, oh damn, there I go again. But after that you might laugh. Let's see, I know this aspect of my personality. I've tried, but there I go again. You might laugh. The situation will become lighter. The situation will become lighter. I will not beat myself up like I was earlier. Like I said, if it's to do with another, I would go with perhaps a smile and an apology. I don't know. Anything can arise. So I bring more lightness. Lightness into a situation. It's no longer that heavy. And what is lightness? Is light. Light, Roshni. What is that light? The light of understanding. I bring that lightness into the situation. So, to re-emphasize that if there is an aspect of my personality which bothers me, I do what I can. Maybe someone tells me, go for therapy. If that appeals to me, I try it. I don't know. But now the understanding is, I did not create this aspect of the personality. I don't like it. There are some aspects I like, some I don't, but I did not create either. I did not create aspects I like, I did not create aspects I don't like. I will try my best because these aspects I don't like, I'm not comfortable with. But I will try my best knowing that the results are not in my control. Which means I have accepted the will of God. I know I am an instrument who can do what I think and feel we should do. Results are not in my control. Success and failure is not in my control. But I would have rested in the night knowing that I did my best. This is what brings the peace. And about repeating these patterns, I remember a quotation, experience is a wonderful thing. It enables one to recognize a mistake every time one repeats it. So then what happens is we are no longer obsessed with our imperfections. And nor are we obsessed with the imperfections of others. Because we know that what we feel are imperfections are not anyone's doing. Then we embrace our imperfections. We embrace them as part of who we are, how God created us. It's not easy, trust me, to embrace one's imperfections. But they have to be embraced. I know I'm like that. I can't help it. Embrace it. God created me this way. God created others this way. Be gentle with yourself. See, Sai Baba was the master of non-duality. Even in the living example of his life, half the people thought he was Hindu, half thought he was Muslim. He called his masjid Masjid Ai and Dwarka Mai. So he was showing the people of that time that it's all the same, and he was a living example of it. Where do you stay in Bombay?
Mm-hmm.
Came by train?
No, I took a cab.
Yeah. Empty roads, I presume?
Yes. I didn't plan on coming here, consciousness led me. So, a case of Rinanubandhan, you could say.
That's not just here, anywhere.
Anywhere, yeah.
All relationships are in Anubandhan. All. Especially the painful ones. Because our learning is through those painful ones. But if you see God in everyone, in this sense of the teaching, then your relationship is with God. Are you the only one in the family who's on this journey, or?
No, actually. So I'm the only child, so my parents are very spiritually inclined, so they are on their separate journeys.
Okay.
So yeah, so not on the same journeys, but...
are accepting of your...
Absolutely.
That's very nice, because many people don't have that. They are considered the black sheep of the family. So it's, you are in a good space for the journey to unfold the way it's supposed to.
As I mentioned, different journeys, so...
Fair enough.
Nobody wants one thing coming in the way of another.
Yes, rightly so. One thing coming in the way of another, rightly so, as long as we don't impose our way on another's way. You're welcome to come here whenever the satsangs are on.
Thank you so much. It was really liberating.
That you can see that tile there on the wall which says Liberty. I picked that up from Canada when I was very young. I don't even recall that Liberty was written on it, you know. But it must have been, like, as you said, an unconscious seeking.
Yeah.
which draws one to objects and things one doesn't realize.
Yeah.